Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our first Brown Bag Seminar of the season with Beverly McLean of the University of Buffalo. I'm Sabina Dietrich here at the University Center for Social and Urban Research. I want to thank Bob Braddock for helping, again, to set up a great program. We're really looking forward to a whole good series throughout the year, and I think Bob's got the handouts for everybody. You can take a look. Our next one will be November 8th, just in a couple weeks, with Jason Hackworth, Professor of Planning and Geography at the University of Toronto. Today our guest is Beverly McLean of the University of Buffalo, who's going to be talking about aging in place, an exploration of built environment challenges in the Rust Belt. For a lot of us who work in many of the neighborhoods around Pittsburgh and our communities, I think there's a lot we're going to be able to learn from what Buffalo's doing and the kind of work that Beverly is doing there. She's a research professor with the School of Architecture and Planning at the University of Buffalo, and her recent research activities focus on sustainable, healthy neighborhood development, community crime prevention, and business development strategies in distressed neighborhoods. We were just talking about some things related to disasters and commercial corridors, which is interesting from the way of some of the successes that have happened in Main Street projects in terms of a more sustainable neighborhood development. A particular emphasis of her research was the exploration of three emerging paradigms for older adult housing: age-integrated neighborhoods, naturally occurring retirement communities, which Pittsburgh was kind of noteworthy for some of those for a while, and the age-restricted retirement community. At the Center for Urban Studies at Buffalo, she laid the framework for exploring the impacts of the neighborhood built environment on potential health outcomes of community residents through the study of the status of African Americans in the Near East Side of Buffalo. She's also worked with the Center for Inclusive Design and Environmental Access, which is IDEA. That's one of the centers we were going through. I remember the IDEA, but I didn't remember what the acronym stood for. And the Rehabilitation Engineering Research Center on Universal Design and the Built Environment to explore the impacts of an older adult housing project on well-being of older adults in distressed first-ring suburbs in Lackawanna. She continues the exploration of neighborhood inequities through the preparation of the Regional Fair Housing and Equity Assessment for the HUD-funded One Region Forward Sustainable Communities Regional Planning Grant. And today, as I said, aging in place. Beverly, welcome to UXER and the University of Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's I know I titled this the Rust Belt, but I think a lot of the lessons from the city of Buffalo can be transferred to other Rust Belt cities. And this has really been accumulation of a lot of research from all these different pieces, trying to pull them together. And one of the things that we're really interested in Buffalo is actually how do you get it out to policymakers, the importance of aging in place. And so basically what I want to do then in terms of the presentation is really sort of talk about the national research context, why it matters nationally, and then why does it matter in places like Erie County, and what are some of the barriers that we have to address, and to be honest, we're not addressing them very, very well, and some emerging policy approaches, and then go to the summary. One of the things that we're talking about, and New York Times has really framed it very well in a lot of articles, that we're approaching a tsunami when it comes to people like me that's very approaching age 65, and now we're thinking about can we really live in our home the rest of our life? And also one of the things we're finding is that as a nation, we're no longer these Aussie inherited families where we have two adults living and like three children, and that we're really having a growth of single households, and a lot of those single households are really aging. People, you know, like especially women, we tend to outlive spouses. And so, and one of the things that's been discovered with surveys, fortunately, that ARP has been doing, is that most people in their 50s really want to age in that house as long as they can. And I don't know about your grandmothers, but my grandmother pointed out to everybody in her, she decided she was going to pass away in a year, that she was going to die in her bed and they were going to take her out, and that she was not going to let her anybody put her in a nursing home, because we have this old stereotype of what aging housing was. So one of the problems, though, is that in to enable the adult, it's not just the house that has to be visible. I don't know if you're familiar with that term of visibility, where you at least have one floor in your house that accommodates a wheelchair, But your neighborhood has to start being visible so they can get around, so they can get to the bus stop, so they can get to the store. And so that's what I mean about there's this mismatch between where a lot of the older adults live and what's available for them in terms of support services. And part of that mismatch, we'll get into it, has to do a lot with, first of all, some of these older adults that are just about 10 years older than us moved to the first ring suburbs where they wanted the Victorian house, it's got stairs, they want the large yard. But one of the things is they were dependent on cars, so there's no nearby shopping opportunities for them to walk or even nearby healthcare. And so the other issue is that because there's not enough demand for transit, they're in these older suburbs and even in the outer ring suburbs in particular, public transportation really is not available. And the other issue in cities like Buffalo, and I don't know about Pittsburgh, we've had a lot of demolitions. And when they demolished this house, they totally destroyed the sidewalk, even though they have a contract with the city that they have to replace the sidewalk into walkable conditions. But the city of Buffalo has not really been enforcing that. So then they're left in these neighborhoods with a lot of cracked sidewalks, which really contribute to a lot of falls, especially for the frail. And a lot of times you'll see residents using the street more than the sidewalk, and especially in the wintertime, because in the wintertime you have no idea where those cracks are. And from personal experience, you can fall very easy.
One thing, in Pittsburgh, Beverly, the homeowner is responsible for the sidewalk. So with vacancy and abandoned houses, no one's responsible ultimately in some of these neighborhoods, too.
Yeah.
So it's same.
In Buffalo, the homeowners are responsible for shoveling, but and also they are somewhat responsible for the cracked, broken sidewalks. But once a demolition occurs, a lot of times that property goes back into receivership for the city of Buffalo. And so the issue, too, is that Buffalo was built up before 1940. So we have an aging housing stock. We have a lot of inner city abandonment, the white flight sprawl. And we're one of the oldest population regions in the country. We're way above the national average. And one of the things that we have when we look at the recent census data on migration, we actually have more in-migration coming from the frail adults. But we have a lot of out-migration going from the younger population. And so what we're happening in the first ring suburbs is almost 1 out of 5 of the residents are over 65. But the other issue that happens on the reverse side is in the inner cities, where the elderly are actually living more alone than they do in the suburbs. We have a lot more single women, in particular single adults. So I don't know if you can see this. This is a map that I did when I was first playing around with data for the HUD grant of mapping regionally where the darkest area indicates, oops, I just made a mistake here, indicates where the older adults are more likely living. And then as you can see, they're basically the first ring suburbs. And then as you get further out, it becomes a little more younger. And in the city, it's actually much lower rate. Okay, and this is actually from the HUD sustainability data. I don't know if you can see it. HUD provided us a data for transit access for the entire Niagara Erie counties. And so what we did was I plotted over that database where the larger proportion of the elderly population is in terms of transit access. As you can see, the city of Buffalo provides a very high transit accessibility. As the elderly get further out, there's less and less transit available. And so, one is the white population and the other is the black population, I'm sorry. It's been a while since I looked at this map. So you can see the white population is more predominant in the suburbs, and the black elderly population are living basically in the areas where the black population is 60% to, in some cases, 90% above in the tracks. Okay, and we took the walk scores, and this is done at the municipal level, and looking at where the areas in the region that are high walkable versus low walkable, And some of these suburbs, they've got some village centers which make them more walkable than some of the areas in the city. But again, we're seeing this mismatch where the elderly are really concentrated in the areas to get services. It's more of a constraint. In the case in the city of Buffalo, it's because of the abandonment of the businesses followed the population exit. Okay, and these are the location of the senior housing complexes. The ones located in the city of Buffalo are much more accessible, again, to services, whereas once they get out of the city, it's much less accessible, and we're actually having a growing NIMBY problem right now in the suburbs of whether or not they want the senior housing projects in their neighborhood or not. And some of it, which we'll get to a slide later, is justified because they're locating them in green fields. And if you want to think about it from a planning perspective, it doesn't make sense to totally locate a senior housing project where the seniors that are going to live there are going to be totally dependent on the automobile. This map I did because of the issue of the pre-1940 residential structures. And the darker it is where the pre-1940 structures are, and the one dot is where the 450 elderly residents. As you can see, the inner city ring is where a lot of the elderly are living, and that inner ring suburbs were all built before pre-1940. So we're talking about Victorian homes. We're talking about houses that's got steps, stairs inside, and most of them, as this map will show you. This is an example. This map really has the good pictures of Buffalo. This is typical houses on the city of Buffalo's west side. They're old Victorians, they're gorgeous. And right now, even in the most distressed areas of Buffalo, these have become hot properties. The younger population are buying them at in-rim, fixing them up, and turning formerly abandoned houses into just a beautiful new home, rehabbed homes. East side was built up after the west side, but again, even we have what's called the telescopic houses, which the first one sort of represents. They're examples of the southern shotgun houses where the first unit was built, then a second unit was built, which is actually lower, and then even some cases, a third unit was built all the way up to the end of the property line. These houses can be adapted more like for the third unit, you could easily create a step-free entrance. In the front, though, you have the steps. These are some of the other ones. The latter one there is a new build. And they could have done some very simple modifications to make that a barrier-free entrance. Okay, and this is an example of our latest housing, and most of this is on East Side. This is Habitat Humanity. And as you notice, they don't take advantage of having an entrance towards the back that could really meet the visibility standards or criteria of a step-free entrance. This one is my pet peeve project. It's a Buffalo Municipal Housing project on Jefferson Avenue. And they do have some handicapped accessible houses, but each one of these could have had, an example was in Milwaukee, where the back entrance of every one of the houses had like a sidewalk that gradually went up to the back entrance, so you had at least a step-free entrance on all houses, not just ones set aside for the elderly. And I don't know if you're familiar with visibility, but what visibility talks about is having at least one entrance that you can go into that house without having to go on a step. And then you have to have at least and half bathroom, and the idea is that your elderly aunt could go into that house and move around in that house without having to be carried if she is in a wheelchair. So we're pushing for it, and we have one of the leading centers in the United States that Sabina talked about with the Inclusive Design Center, but it's not reaching out to policymakers. Okay, and the suburban examples, again, these are more the ranch-style houses in the first-ring suburbs, and then you get more into the luxury, almost McMansion houses in the outer-ring suburbs. So we're seeing that we do have a variety of housing types, and a lot of them could be adapted with few changes. And it's not to require expensive changes. It's to try require some simple adaptability. Infrastructure issues. This is examples, and these are bad shots of Buffalo.
We've seen them.
This is all from a neighborhood that I live in, but it doesn't all look like this. The first house is actually gone. It's been demolished. But it's an old, actually cherry liquor store, I mean factory. The other one's an old gas station, and this is an example of what happens after a vacant lot, and it's actually next to a boarded house. But what you're seeing is, this is the problems. There's a lot of elderly people that still live in this neighborhood, and you see what happens after the demo, or even in the case of the old cherry place. The fact the sidewalks were cracked to begin with, and it really is a vacant lot now. And I'm not sort of one, somebody's really angry with me because I asked the mayor to demolish it. It was leaning, you don't see it in this picture. Okay. This is, and an issue. This is where people have to go shop. This is Northtown and University Boulevard Plaza. One is sort of down the road and one is up the road. But if you were coming from one of those neighborhoods, you have to get across that intersection. And it's not easy. The other one is the Walden Galleria, which was built on a greenfield, and there was a lot of controversy. And it was even more controversial because they didn't even have a bus stop inside of the Galleria, and it led to one of the Johnny Cochran coming to Buffalo and winning a lot of money for the family of Cynthia Wiggins, who got killed on her way to going to work and left. She was like 18 years old and she had a 2-year-old child. So after her famous case, now when you go to Walden Galleria, the buses stop inside of the Galleria, but she had to cross all of those lanes to get to work. And so you can imagine what it'd be like if you were actually living over in that housing complex. The only way to get to the Walden Galleria is to drive. And it's pretty much this way. I mean, the bus stop comes from inner city Buffalo, and it does, and it's a frequent bus for the University Boulevard. But the only catch is it stops. It's 5 o'clock on Sunday. And the workers who live in Buffalo a lot of times actually have to walk from the University Plaza to get back to a Buffalo bus to get home. But imagine if you were an elderly living in that neighborhood where there is, both these neighborhoods around them have a high proportion of elderly population. And one of the things, I don't have the data, but we just had it in the Buffalo News about our pedestrian and bicycle accidents. We've also had an incident lately of 80-year-olds driving that shouldn't be driving, and they've been going into restaurants, into stores, because they mix up the brake and the gas pedal. And we just had one, actually it was in the paper 2 days ago in the town of Tonawanda, which is also an inner ring northern suburb, and they went into a restaurant. So the issue then becomes, and that's the policy dilemma, how do you work and collaborate? At least here, there are sidewalks. It's just getting frustrated because they don't give you enough time to get across. And that's the major issue, is the timing of the signs and the signals. Okay, Weinberg Campus, and this is what I mean about senior housing complexes. And I couldn't on Google Map get a closer picture of this. But what I wanted to show you is this is now the center in the town of Amherst, which is a suburb of Buffalo, where it is becoming targeted for all senior services for the town. And the town is not part of the Erie County senior van services, so they're thinking about an alternative private van service. But the seniors have to get to the Weinberg campus in order then to be driven to the nearby shopping places. And as you can see, there is absolutely no sidewalks around the Weinberg campus. The other one I'm showing on the slide is the proposed Young's Road site. The Erie County IDA, or no, the Amherst IDA has decided that they were no longer going to give tax breaks to senior housing projects that didn't meet the criteria of being closer to services. So they denied the project the tax break. The planning board in the town of Amherst has not given them a variance. So they're challenging that currently. The residents are complaining, and it's more than NIMBY, personally. That's Greenfield. And they're complaining that even though the developer owns all of that Greenfield, there's wetlands there, and it's really going to affect their property taxes. But I really personally think they have a strong argument that it does not make sense putting a senior housing project there. And this has been typical previously, and actually it was the Regional Institute that did a study for Erie County on senior housing projects, and their recommendation out of their study was you needed to start locating them closer to services that they need instead of having a huge parking lot so that they can use their automobile, but start thinking about maybe they shouldn't be using that car. Okay, so the challenges, and this is basically going through and throwing in everything I've been doing and research. We score high in a lot of variety of options, but we still have these issues of how to adapt these older housing stocks to meet the sort of barrier-free entry. We have newer projects like the Jefferson one I showed you. It meets the minimal ADA requirement that you have to have accessibility and visibility. But we have great transit access where the commercial districts are in decline in West Side and East Side corridor. But we still are weak in the suburbs. We have been going through a major cutbacks with our transportation system. And because of the transportation demand in a lot of those outer suburbs, they're actually getting rid of the lines. And so that there's a town of the city of Lockport, New York, is having to deal with that now, because they have a lot of aging population, and the city has to figure out what's going to be the alternative in terms of paratransit when the NFTA goes away. Retail, again, the quality of retail inside the city of Buffalo has really sharply declined. We have a lot of commercial corridors that were once the largest corridors outside of the central business district, but the city really hasn't created priority. One of the issues is that there's growing revitalization on the West Side, but we have the street called Main Street in Buffalo. And the thing with Main Street is a divider between White Buffalo and Black Buffalo. So whenever you propose a project sometimes on East Side Buffalo, people will say, why bother? The neighborhood is dying. And there has been a lot of population decline. So the question then becomes, how do you make it more walkable? How do you make it more accessible? And a lot of people, especially in Lower West Side and Lower East Side, the amount of households that have access to vehicles is like 40%. So you have 60% of the population that does not have access to vehicles. And so, especially for the elderly, if you don't have access to vehicle, you're dependent on public transportation to get to the quality shopping areas. And sometimes you have to do 3 bus changes, which means that your ride sometimes is almost an hour, and sometimes an hour and a half. That's one way. Then it's almost 3 hours for a day. Okay. Statewide, ARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, has really been taking the idea of age-friendly cities. They've had case studies done with Portland, with New York City, I think Philadelphia, to try to promote more public awareness of the necessity and the desirability to become more friendly. And the idea of age-friendly is it's inclusive to all ages. It's inclusive for children, it's inclusive for elderly. It's not just a child-friendly place, it's a friendly place that anybody wants to live there. So they have 8 age-friendly principles, and these are based on the partnership with WHO, the World Health Association, and ARP. Outdoor spaces and buildings, really, you need to look at more of them, more places for people to, you know, go to a public space and relax, and they need to have, you know, curb cuts, so accessibility. transportation, you need a variety. You need safe and affordable. You don't have to, you should not have to rely on a taxi cab to get to a grocery store. Housing, you need a lot of range of options, and you need more emphasis, to be honest, on cheap home modification. It doesn't have to be expensive to make your first floor of your house, even an old Victorian, accessible. There's things you can do, and it doesn't always have to be that ramp in front of the house that makes it look ugly. It's that back entrance and using a graduated sidewalk. Social participation, you need to recognize that you don't need to ignore the elderly, that they need to be involved in the public process, especially in planning initiatives. You need them more involved and connected. You need a lot more transgenerational activities. And you need the respect and social inclusion. And Buffalo's becoming a city of a lot more cultural diversity. We've had a lot more refugees. In the past, they used to go to Canada a lot quicker, but it's a lot slower. So we have a growing Burmese population and an incredibly growing Bangladeshi population. And one of the reasons is east side of Buffalo now has this mosque and an old Catholic church, and it's really attracting a lot of Muslim immigrants. And you have to have communication information. You need to figure out ways, not just in Facebook or other tweet, whatever, I don't use it. You need to help technology be more available and help them be more connected and really help a system of keeping track of where the elderly are, especially in case of a disaster. And you need some more community support and health services. I mean, we do have a growing so-called medical corridor in downtown Buffalo, which is accessible to a lot of the residents on east side and west side because it's closer to downtown. So what New York State ART did was they called for inclusive community design, which is a little different than visibility. And the major difference is in terms of the full bathroom. Visibility only requires a half bathroom, but still be able to use it. And the other difference, which I forgot to put here, is they also want a kitchen available on the first floor. And they were asking this for all publicly subsidized housing. It didn't pass New York State legislation. It would have required some of these community development projects to be more expensive. But they spent a year on trying to get some legislation through New York State to really start recognizing the importance that we are going to be a state. As a state, we have above average in terms of population over 65.
How far did it get in the legislature? I mean, how
did
it go?
We stopped getting emails, so I can't answer that question. Because actually, I was one of the people that was invited to be part of the ARP, task force, and we had all these emails up until just about the time the legislation was to be to leave, and then no more communication. So I can't answer that. I think it didn't get very far. It had sponsors, but I don't think it had a majority of legislation.
Will it get reintroduced?
I'm not sure. I don't explain it. No more emails. That was 2 years ago. So far we haven't heard anything. But there's other ways. The one thing ARC did was it did cooperate with a group in Buffalo, the Neighborhood Wellness Institute. As a grassroots initiative, it called for complete streets. So Buffalo was one of the first cities in the country to get complete streets, which is looking at street designs that ensure that everybody who uses it, either a bicyclist or a car or pedestrian, would be able to use it safely. So the legislation for New York State was passed in 2011, signed by the governor. In Buffalo, it was passed in 2008, and this is the quote from the commissioner. It shall include pedestrian bicycle facilities and all new street construction, street reconstruction, street maintenance, public works, and parks by the city. Erie County's was passed about a year later, and again, the emphasis on pedestrian bicycle facilities, construction, reconstruction, parks, where feasible. And we're seeing more and more bike lanes in the city. I see it in front of my house now, and they're making it. The only issue that some people have is that where they want the cars to park is closer to the sidewalk, and then the bike lane is right next to the cars. And it becomes a problem on the turn lanes. But they're trying. I like the bike lanes that are separated by grass. I feel more comfortable. But they are looking at it. They haven't put them on Delaware, which is a major street in Buffalo. They've done Fillmore Avenue, which sort of connects three of the Olmsted parks. So it is an improvement, and they are thinking about it. They're redoing sidewalks, redoing curb cuts, and a lot more emphasis has been on the pedestrian quality. The city of Buffalo is in process of redoing its zoning and land use. A big emphasis because of the complete streets on reinforcing walkable neighborhoods, building on existing strengths, capitalizing on neighborhood assets, and improving transportation, and really encouraging more walking and cycling. The Green Code, the draft of it's supposed to be released, and the next, it should have been released in September. There's some delay for some reason. They would like to get it to a common council by the end of December, but it does not look like they're going to do it because they have to go through the public review process. But one thing is that they made a big outreach to youth, but they didn't make the same outreach to the elderly population. Okay, One Region Forward, and I know Bob Shuley was here recently. There was a partnership between University of Buffalo and the Greater Buffalo Niagara Regional Transportation Council, the MPO, to do a sustainable Buffalo Niagara region, and it's in the planning phase, and it is a planning grant. It's to focus on more livable Buffalo Niagara region, and it's looking at issues of land use, food accessibility, transportation, mobility, housing, and neighborhoods, and climate change. And then there's a separate housing working group, and within that group, thanks to a person who's the director of the Heart of the City neighborhood, she really pushed for them to think about the importance of a cradle to grave neighborhoods. And her not-for-profit agency is one of the first and most proactive housing agencies in the city of Buffalo to really have a new housing project called Cynthia Gardens that really recognizes the importance of aging in place. And it's just part of it's just to do with her personality. She's very, I'll explain it, charismatic. Okay. What's happening now in terms of more grassroots initiatives is the Neighborhood Wellness Institute that was responsible for pushing for the complete streets is starting actually next week a Be Active pilot project for the Fillmore District. And the Fillmore District really changed its demography after the 2010 census and now includes the most extreme poverty tract in the city of Buffalo and the third most extreme poverty tract and one of the most affluent neighborhoods, Allentown, which is on the other side of the medical campus. And so it's probably going to offer a very dynamic case study of how do you start promoting wellness, and there's a big emphasis on aging, and the Neighborhood Wellness Institute has done a lot of projects from the non-for-profit sector promoting falls prevention. And they've been working actively with ARP, and they did a sidewalk survey in about four different neighborhoods in the city of Buffalo. So part of that, the Be Active project that they're going to implement is an extension of their previous work. The city of Buffalo is starting a senior wellness project, which is going to be focused at Broadway Market. And the city of Buffalo's aging division is limited in what they can do because Erie County has the senior aging programs. But what the director, Doug Ruffin, wants to do is Broadway Market is located, it's a public market, it's located in the Fillmore District, and he's created already a senior, what do you call it, Community Resource Center, which hasn't opened yet because we have a mayor's election going right now. And what he wants to do is he created a space for them to come to the market where they would feel comfortable once he takes his vans, which he only has two, and he's going to go to the city senior centers, pick them up, bring them to the market Thursdays and Fridays so they can shop at the market, and when they're waiting for the transit bus, they could be in a comfortable space that the seniors said they didn't want to look like City Hall, they did not want to work like senior centers, I mean, how to explain, institutional. So he really got a lot of furniture, a new carpet, and it really looks like a living room, which is his goal. In addition, he is collaborating with the Broadway Market's roof garden, where seniors are taking certain of the beds, which this year was a pilot, it didn't go quite that well. But next year what he wants to do is he's got a Green Thumbs project. So seniors that are homebound, he's going to give them the plants to start. And then he will take the starter plants and plant them in the roof garden beds so that it's a way of trying to promote senior nutrition. And so it's just something that he came up on his own that's not going to cost the city of Buffalo any extra money. At the same time, it benefits the Broadway Market that needs the customers because of the declining neighborhood base. So in summary, the city is starting and the region is starting to recognize that demography is changing and we've got to do something where we're going to really spend a lot of extra money. And if we don't, we're going to have to pay for the care in nursing homes, which is extremely expensive. We're also recognizing that barriers to livability, it's not just about youth, it's about all. It's about every group, that we have to start thinking comprehensively, that we have to recognize everybody that lives in a neighborhood. And to be honest, it's not one size fits all, because every region is different. And that's been a debate, actually, in the Housing and Neighborhood, a part of the One Region Forward. Some of the people saying, what do you mean by walkability? Why does these rural centers have to be walkable? And it's not that they're advocating for walkability, it's that they want some node so that the seniors doesn't have to drive 100 miles to go to a grocery store. They just want them to be able to stop in a village center and be able to shop in that village center and minimize their driving time. But one of the things is that we still don't have explicit recognition of the impact of the emerging baby boomers. So what I did was I provided this sheet that gives sort of a summary of the different issues facing the inner city, the inner suburbs, and the outer suburbs, and you can just look through it. But basically, it sort of summarizes everything that was in the presentation, and it really starts looking at some of the obstacles that you have when you start thinking about these issues regionally and not just focused on one area. That there's differences in different areas. It's a lot easier probably to retrofit the suburbs, especially the inner ring suburbs, that where a lot of the housing units that were built were after the war. They were, you know, have the GIs move out and give them their dream house. The outer suburbs with the McMansion houses, to be perfectly honest, they have the money to retrofit it. I mean, it's not affordability.
Repeat your statement.
What I mean is, like, the inner ring suburbs were basically the 1945 suburbs where the veterans came back and they moved to have a better quality of life, you know, the ranch home and the yards. That, I think, it's going to be easier to retrofit those houses into making a barrier-free entrance. You don't really have to have all the ugly ramps. But once you get out to the outer suburbs where you have a lot of these McMansions, huge houses, huge lots, they have the money. If they can afford a $500,000 house, they can really retrofit it very well. Okay. That's what I mean. I recognize there's some rural towns and villages that will need assistance, but it depends. You also have to look at it in terms of the income issues. It's more of an issue in the inner suburbs because they're not going to be retirees with a lot of money. They have enough money to get by with, and then when you get in the inner city, a lot of the retirees are $800, $1,200 a month. They can't afford it. Okay, so any questions?
Good. So thanks, Beverly. Let's take questions, and I want to first introduce Rich Schultz, who is the director of UXR. So today we have a Survey Research Center. Scott Beach is our director, Qualitative Data Analysis, Don Musa, and Gerontology. So it fit a lot of the programs today at UXR. Rich?
Great, yeah. Thank you for a very interesting talk. And you know, as I think about Pittsburgh compared to Buffalo, Buffalo's pretty flat, right?
Yes, we don't have your topography issues.
So,
you have more issues in terms of the neighborhoods than we do.
Correct. I mean, and it seems more or less that everything you said about Buffalo applies to Pittsburgh, except we probably don't have this legislation or these policies in place that...
I don't think the state's done anything like what New York State's trying to do.
So my assumption is, correct me if I'm wrong, that all of these problems get compounded in a city like ours where you have hills and steep ascents and descents. And
I mean, because Portland is very similar to Pittsburgh in the hill problem. Buffalo is, I mean, it was a culture shock going from Portland, Oregon to Buffalo, New York, not because of the aging differences of the cities, but because the topography in Buffalo is extremely flat. There's a few hills, so that you have different issues, and I think Portland would be more of an example to look at as to how they deal with the topography issues where you're aging in place. Because Buffalo really, it doesn't have the problem.
Yeah. But thinking of the Portland example, my sense is, you and I both lived there for some time, that a lot of these issues are not as big a problem as they are in Buffalo, even though they have the topography problem. Is that because they're a relatively new city? I mean, is that the age of the city itself become a big factor in this
situation? I think it is. I mean, because Buffalo was built up before 1940. Okay. One difference in Buffalo and Pittsburgh is that Buffalo got dramatically impacted in 1812 by the War of 1812. The fire really hit the downtown really bad. But even so, there's certain areas of the city of Buffalo that does have like 1850 houses, but a lot of the housing in Buffalo is really 1890 to 1920. And that is really an age factor. Portland has a lot of the Victorian houses, which would be a problem, but I think in suburbs is less of a problem. I think it's more the ranch style.
Beverly, a lot of the discussion was oriented on the thought that the seniors attempting to live in place will have to get to services or goods.
Yes.
Isn't there also a lot of, I don't know if I like the word speculation, belief, if there's anything research-based about it, that the preponderance of elderly living, particularly in the first-ring suburbs, will create NORCs, naturally occurring retirement communities, that will create the kind of market demand that will attract entrepreneurs who will have the aim of bringing the services to them.
Yes, it's
rather
both
than
ways.
Them having to be mobile to get to the services and goods, it'll provide more entrepreneurial opportunities to take the services and goods to them. Have you discovered any of that information? And
not that much, but I think you're right. One of the things that, in terms of the inner city, which is a different problem too, is with the distress of the commercial districts, a lot of the businesses have left. So the goal would be how do you bring them back into that areas, which makes them, again, closer to the seniors. In terms of the inner ring suburbs, one of the things is in terms of the small villages and towns, which is what the Amherst IDA is trying to reinforce, if you're going to locate a senior housing project, why don't you locate where there's some existing businesses, instead of locating, in the example of the Young's Road out in the Greenfield. And I think you're right that it has to be both ways. And I think one thing about the Amherst IDA director, who also happens to be an adjunct faculty member at University of Buffalo, is at least he's starting to recognize that.
Because I'm thinking from a pure like planning and zoning standpoint, you'd want to be talking to local governments about making sure their zoning provides for entrepreneurial opportunities for these decentralized kinds of businesses or services to appear in neighborhoods in compatible ways to be able to provide that decentralized service.
Yeah, we have a lot of what you call strip malls, which are located in those areas. A lot of those strip malls have become abandoned. And so what you're talking about is how would you revitalize those strip malls that were located
following the population and actually close to that population and sort of think of a more comprehensive revitalization strategy. So, I mean, I'm agreeing with you. It's, I think we have to do both. Yes. Hi, Steph. Go ahead.
So, you know, one of the mentors is just like the Weinberg campuses for urban neighborhoods to have these aging in place centers like the Weinberg campus, but for the frail elderly in the city. And I know HUD had a great tool too, and I don't know if they're still doing those now, but part of it is that there's all the disconnect between services, meals on wheels, Medicare, and all the other services for low-income seniors. And I think it could really save them a lot of, you know, money for the government if there were places. And I know in Buffalo, the mayor had determined there's a former public housing building. That space was supposed to be developed for campus for the elderly. I don't know if that was done.
Within the Buffalo Municipal Housing Authority, there are certain public housing projects that are targeted towards the seniors. They're working right now on the Perry Commodore projects of totally tearing down all of the old high-rises and creating a new community there. In that one, they're looking at targeting, bringing the services right into the public housing facility, you know, for both the youth, for the aging. And it's under review currently at the national level because it was one of the HUD, I forgot the project names. It's one of those housing, it's part of the HUD projects to totally tear down the old dysfunctional housing projects and put in something new. And there's been an incredible planning effort, and the City of Buffalo has worked very closely. And actually the Center for Urban Studies at University of Buffalo has been leading the planning effort.
You mean the HUD Choice Grants?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and to Rich's point, Larimer neighborhood here in Pittsburgh is a very depleted neighborhood, and lots of buildings have been torn down. And the irony is a lot of those neighborhoods are the ones that are flat, where if they had viable commercial corridors and the kind of housing that they're the topography is not a problem. But the problem is the built environment now is the problem. But for redevelopment, the Larimer neighborhood has a huge plan and put in for a choice grant for exactly that. And some of that fits in. And some of the folks in the room have worked both in Homewood and Larimer and have some experience there.
Yeah. And Buffalo's doing the same. They are becoming more proactive. Hopefully with the change in the green code, they will be more proactive. The City of Buffalo really did try to do a lot of community engagement, and in terms of the Choice Neighborhood Project, it was extensive. Yes?
You mentioned that there are things that can be done in-home, in the interior of homes to make them, to enable aging in place.
Yes.
And suggested that they were not necessarily terribly expensive.
I think it depends on the home. Like, the concept of visibility is you're not going to really deal with the second or the third floor. You're going to deal with just the first floor. And I don't know how Pittsburgh is, but a lot of the homes in Buffalo has a back entrance where you could actually do like a graduated sidewalk and change that entrance so a wheelchair could get through it. And it depends on the design of the home. You need like 30 to 36 feet wide hallways. If you have a lot of open space on the first floor, which a lot of the old Victorian houses do, then it can be easily adaptable. If it's a lot of narrow, like row houses, it's harder.
But when you suggested that inexpensive, I mean, it's fairly inexpensive to put up walls. It's very expensive to put in plumbing. You know, that kind of to retrofit. Are there methods?
I think
that are being developed to make that process less
easier?
Expensive?
I think one of the things that the architects have really focused on, and that's where the Center for Inclusive Design at Buffalo, they've looked at a lot of ways where you can adapt the house and try to make it more economical. Because you're not really doing a complete gut. So you've got the plumbing in place, you just have to adapt it a little. I mean, it varies on the house, but it's possible for some of the houses to be more adaptable. That's what I mean about the ranch homes, because they're pretty much one floor.
Okay.
you don't have the changes. Yes.
Let me say something controversial. What about the idea of abandoning the notion of aging in place? Why not give it up? And if you ask yourself, you know, what are the circumstances under which giving up on that idea might be attractive, is if you build or make available facilities or places to live that in fact turn out to be more attractive than aging in place. And I'm wondering if that kind of out-of-the-box thinking might not be in some ways more efficient, at least for some communities, where you give up on everything you've got going in a particular community because it's not feasible or viable to keep those, say, few older persons in their community, and you move them all out to somewhere else that they presumably like and appreciate.
I think when we did this project in Lackawanna for Our Lady of Victory, the student came up with, it's about choice. And so there, a lot of elderly residents and from the inner suburbs actually moved into the Our Lady Victory project, but it was really easy to adapt because it was an old hospital. So it had all the conditions for the hallways, the wide entrance, the stairways, and then every one of the apartment units was basically new. It was a total, almost new built. And the seniors that moved in there moved in because they got tired of taking care of the Victorian yards, tired of doing the snow shoveling, tired of taking care of the yards and cutting them because their kids had moved away. So in some cases, it could be very viable. There's still a lot of seniors that want to move into these sort of like Weinberg campuses where it's almost a gated community. They don't have to deal with young kids. And that's their preference. But there's still seniors that fight you on forcing them to move. So I think it's a matter of choices and options.
Move. He said give them a choice
another
that they want to take.
And the problem is those places exist, but they're very expensive.
Yeah.
And anybody just over that poverty level cannot afford what they're asking for.
Yeah.
I can't afford to live there. I would go there. But
I can't afford to. Yeah. But I'm wondering, though, if there might not be efficiencies and cost savings if you think about it globally in terms of not just as a place to live, but as a place where you get your health care, you enable them to function longer, better, because of the support that surrounds them. So if you develop an economic model that incorporates all of those things, then there might be cost savings and affordabilities that you wouldn't have otherwise.
And the studies have shown that those continuing care communities rehab their residents better because if they're promising to keep them there, it's cheaper to keep them in a personal care level or in their own apartment rather than maintain them in the nursing home.
Sure.
So the rehab and the training and the apartment visit with a physical therapist that can help to make that apartment work in the new conditions, maybe with a walker or wheelchair. They are rehabbing those people back to a lower level of care in the continuing care communities. Back to the first problem, who can get in there? You have to have a higher income to even get to that point.
In some of them, the Our Lady Victory one actually was built on the concept because it used to be a hospital. It was Our Lady Victory Hospital. It was huge. So the first phase was apartments. Then they started doing the nursing care and then the long-term care. And there is rehab. They put health services in. But it's highly subsidized. It's through Catholic Charities.
Okay. So then you need, because Medicare won't pay for that long-term care, so that there's where your support service comes from.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's a matter of degree of aging also, or the like you have a lot of these homes too, they haven't had an occupancy permit. They've lived there their whole lives. So you talk about affordability. Like we have, I'm from Penn Hills, we have a free handrail program. So, you know, you might have basement steps that have no handrail, and that would be recognized if the home was sold, but it's not being sold. So even like a free handrail, or we have a $1,000 grant program, that's enough to do help with the bathroom and things like that. So it's a degree, but I think it helps to keep aging. It helps to very affordable and helps people stay in their homes.
Chris, Penn Hills is a great example because one, Beverly, it's a large
it's a
suburb.
It's a community, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a NORC.
Yeah.
Yeah, but parts of it, I mean, it's large, it's 40,000 in a county where we have very few large suburbs, but it's one where people have moved in 30 and 48 years ago and they're aging. What else, Chris, is Penn Hills doing in terms of what Beverly's talking about, looking forward about the aging of the population?
There happens to be a huge market for senior citizen housing, so if a 60-unit senior citizen housing units being built, it's occupied, or it's sold out before it's finished. But the problem we're having is some of what you talked about is that the transportation is leaving. So, or you look at your zoning ordinance and it says you have to have one parking space for every two units.
Yeah.
That's a joke, right? So first of all, there's a sea of parking at a senior citizen housing complex, and then also the transportation is being removed, going away, not getting there. So some of the, when you're going through a project and you're getting home funds, things like that from HUD, and one of the things you have is shopping and transportation and stuff like that, that's what was being discussed when it was being built. Now it's built, and the Port Authority pulls that bus route. So it strands these, so I say, what are we doing? We're watching it fail in some ways, but this, I think some of these, we have a lot of single family homes and we're trying to help keep people in them, and maybe that's not, I agree with you where maybe that's not the thing to do, but for quite a while I think it helps. Small things can help a lot.
Well, I think the real problem gets to when you reach that 85 plus, mm-hmm. 90. I mean, my grandmother was fully capable of living in her home until she was 92.
Right.
But again, it depends on how close relatives are nearby, because relatives come in, or you have Meals on Wheels, you have these other sort of support services that come in, or at least in New York State, from senior services. And they do have senior service vans, but if there's a partnership between that township and Erie County, it's all set up. Whereas in the town of Amherst, where they don't participate with the senior van service, they have another private system. Now they're wondering, how can we pay for it? Especially with pulling out the bus routes.
How much success have you had outside of Buffalo in regard to complete streets and promoting pedestrianism?
Rich, you want to tell folks who you are and your transit?
I'm a transit expert, but I just made a presentation on active transportation. The planning conference, so basically multimodal transportation is what I do.
Okay. I know that Complete Streets has really taken off. I subscribe to their listserv. I know that across the United States, more and more cities are adopting it. I think it's becoming recognized as a more affordable, more efficient transportation. Whether or not it's really created a sense of active transportation to the degree that they want to, I think it depends on the region. I really think Portland, Oregon, at least in the downtown area, is a very active transportation system, but they've been on the cutting edge. And Buffalo has lagged. I mean, it's getting better. It's getting the buses so that you can get onto them. Every bus is now pretty much required by federal law to be accessible. But I think it's something that's just started, so it's going to take maybe another 10 years to really see the impact. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I don't know if Pittsburgh has a complete streets policy.
Yes, they do. No, I was thinking in terms of outside of the municipal Buffalo.
I would say that outside of the municipal Buffalo, only in the town villages.
Right. Same here, more to some extent.
Go ahead. It's an Erie County policy, but I think that it's really hard. Like, the thing is that what happened that's making, like what you're talking about, businesses coming back to these areas, like in the inner ring suburbs, is that we had a lot of mega malls built in the 1980s and the 1990s, and they became competition to the old malls that were located closer to the neighborhoods. And a lot of them are being abandoned. Yeah.
Could you define complete street? Obviously, on a street you need a lane in each direction, but then what are the accommodations? options for, does it require a sidewalk on each side of the street or one sidewalk and one bike lane, or what is the definition?
It depends where it's feasible. Like what they're doing in the city of Buffalo, where the streets actually are four lanes, where they're two and two, they're actually creating a separate lane for parking and a separate lane for the bike path, and then you have the sidewalk. And the sidewalks are usually on both sides of the streets. But one of the problems in the side streets in Buffalo, and actually the Idea Center did a project for New York City, is some of those sidewalks are not wide enough for the wheelchair. So they're slanting them in some cities like New York City, where they're very narrow, so the wheelchair can easily more easily get around. In Buffalo, they haven't reached that stage.
Okay.
And then the other problem is they're starting to replace these sidewalks, like around Broadway Market, they just replaced the sidewalks and repaved the street, but then they didn't do the connecting street because the contract was only for
certain streets.
And they replaced all the curb cuts, but right next to the curb cut that they replaced, which is right on the other side of Broadway Market, is this crumbled sidewalk because they didn't think about it in terms of, we've got the contractors here, why don't we just hook Lombard and Gibson Street with Market Street and let's fix all the sidewalks around the market, which is a city-owned building. So the answer is sometimes it's feasible, and they do put in that point where feasible, because on the narrow sidewalks there's not enough space to even put a bike lane, and there's not even enough space between the house and the sidewalk to really have a nice sidewalk for a wheelchair. So I think that they're slow at thinking about how do you overcome the obstacles, which is the problem with the street complete streets movements.
Liberty Avenue has the bike lanes and sidewalks and such. And then the bulb outs here, as well as the pedestrian countdown timers, in an effort to enhance pedestrian environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the progressive traffic signals enhance the automobile environment and the transit environment. It remains to be seen.
Good. Well, I think if anyone wants to stay, Beverly's available, but I want to thank everybody for coming. Thank you, Beverly, for introducing a lot of things for us to think about as we go about what might be possible in some of our Pittsburgh and other suburban examples. There's a lot here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.